Hi, I'm Greg Kolka with Stand to Reason, and this is our eighth session together in our training on Street Smarts. Let's take a moment to review what we covered last session. First, I encouraged you that in evangelism, don't try to argue for inerrancy of God's Word. It's just going to get you showered with a bunch of alleged contradictions. Instead, focus on the Bible as an historically accurate account of Jesus' life. And that's the way most first century people heard the gospel anyway, testimony of Jesus and his resurrection. Second, I said that the single most important tip for reading your Bible accurately is this: never read a Bible verse. Always read the larger context, okay? Third, we learned two things about the conquest of Canaan. First, we learned that the ancient Near Eastern writers customarily used hyperbole to exaggerate the details of military conquest. For example, wipe out meant to utterly defeat, not necessarily to annihilate. Second, God's principal goal was to judge the Canaanites for radical debauchery, including child sacrifice, and then to drive them out and purge the land of that religion. So it wasn't genocide. It was a proper act of judgment by God on a wicked people. Finally, I made some important clarifications about slavery in the Bible. First, the so-called slavery regulated by the Old Testament law bore no resemblance to the kind of slavery we had in America. Next, I said the Hebrew word ebed, translated slave, can also mean servant, and it usually does. Third, lots of people hired out, so to speak, as an ebed, an indentured servant, as a form of employment to protect them from poverty, all right? That's how they got a job. Finally, we learn that through the Mosaic law, God placed boundaries and controls on servanthood and slavery to humanize practices that were often less than ideal. Now, in this session, we're going to talk about the alleged conflict between science and religion. For over 100 years, non-Christians have used science as a stick to beat up on religion. Therefore, no religious claims, especially miracles, can be taken seriously by anyone serious about science. That's their view. Science, then, has weighed in with finality against God. Worse, this religiously motivated God of the Gaps move is actually a science stopper. So what I want to show you is there is a philosophic sleight of hand going on here. And once you see the maneuver, you will not be fooled by the con. I want to give you three pieces of evidence to show that the alleged conflict between science and religion is completely contrived. Science and Christian religion, at least, are not inherently at odds. So here's where we're going in our session today. First, I want you to see that it's not possible for science to disprove God, or miracles, or souls, or anything like that, because that task is completely beyond its capability. Second, the alleged battle between science and religion has been a not-so-subtle philosophical power play that's designed to keep God off the table. Third, appealing to God as an explanation is not an example of God of the Gaps. Right? And then finally, I want to show you that historically, belief in God wasn't a science stopper. It was the science starter, and for a very good reason. So let me start our session today by asking what might seem like an odd question. Here it is. Can you weigh a chicken with a yardstick? Well, of course not. Yardsticks measure length, not weight. Does it follow, then, that chickens have no weight? Well, again, no. Tools meant to measure one feature tell you nothing about another feature they can't measure. Now, this notion is so basic, it's easy to miss its significance regarding science and the supernatural. So let me say it bluntly. Strictly speaking, science is not capable of ruling out anything, even in principle, about the immaterial realm. Why? Science is designed to measure the physical things of the world using empirical methods. That means it's only capable of drawing conclusions about the physical things it measures with empirical methods, not about anything non-physical. I'm not dissing science here. I'm just admitting a natural limitation of the method. That's all. The mistake is that if science can't find it, then it doesn't exist. And this is the mistake that's made all the time. For example, years ago I read an article in Time magazine, okay? This was a whole issue that was dedicated to the issue of consciousness, okay? What is consciousness? They couldn't figure out what consciousness was because it's weird. It's not physical, all right? So they end up kind of shrugging their shoulders, except they came to one conclusion about it. Here's what they said. Despite our every instinct to the contrary, there's one thing that consciousness is not. Some entity deep inside the brain that corresponds to the self. Some kernel of awareness that runs the show. In other words, there's no soul, right? The light is on, but nobody's home, right? So how do they know that? Here's what they said. After more than a century of looking for it, the soul, brain researchers have long since concluded that there's no conceivable place for such a self to be located in the physical brain, and it simply doesn't exist. Now think about that. In other words, scientists say that souls don't exist because they can't find it looking for it. And there's no room in the brain for it to fit. That's like saying, you said there was an invisible man in your house. I went in your house. I didn't see him anywhere. I looked under the bed and in the closet and in the back rooms everywhere. I didn't see him. Look at friends, scientists are not going to find an immaterial soul by looking for it. Even if they look for it for 100 years, you can't see invisible things. Plus, immaterial invisible things like souls don't need physical spaces to fit into. Immaterial objects, by definition, do not occupy three-dimensional space. Okay. Now, this doesn't prove a soul exists, of course. But it does show that the inability of science to find one means nothing. The question of the soul has to be resolved in a different way, okay? Please don't miss this point. It's critical. Though science can help us in lots of ways, it cannot foreclose on anything. Souls, spirits, gods, salvation, heaven, hell. It can't disprove any of those things because it's outside its domain. Simple reason why. It is not equipped to measure those things. It's like trying to weigh a chicken with a yardstick. This approach to defeating theism is a dead end. So here's a sample conversation that makes this point. Someone might start as Michael Shermer, the American Atheist Skeptic magazine founder, starts his own lectures. I used to believe in God, but now I believe in science. My response? Explain to me how that works. I'm not sure I understand what the conflict is. Well, you know, I used to believe in all that supernatural stuff, but science has shown me none of that is real. Okay, can you help me understand exactly how science has shown the supernatural can't be real? Well, you know, ancient people, they used to believe in lots of things that were caused by gods, like the weather. Now, in science, we know the real reason for weather, and it has nothing to do with gods. Well, I agree with that. And there are lots of ways science has cleared up confusion for us, but you're saying something different, aren't you? What's that? Well, you're saying that science has somehow shown that the supernatural world itself is not real. I'm just asking how science can do that. Well, I don't get your point. Well, science studies the physical world, right? Yeah, that's right. It studies things you can know through your five senses. Is that right? Correct. Well, if there really were immaterial things like gods or souls or spirits or miraculous powers, would any of those things be physical? No, of course not. Well, if they wouldn't be physical, how can science have anything to say about them? How can an empirical way of knowing show that non-empirical things don't exist? Well, there you go. That's the issue. And here's the problem. Science has never advanced empirical evidence showing that supernatural events can't happen. Instead, it has assumed prior to the evidence that the material world is all there is. And that's not science. That is philosophy. Consider this. The most popular science documentary of all time begins with these words. The cosmos is all that is, or ever was, or ever will be. Now, of course, the film is PBS's Cosmos, hosted by legendary astronomer Carl Sagan. But oddly, the opening line of the documentary is not scientific at all. Why? Because no empirical analysis can ever tell you all that is, or ever was, or ever will be, even in principle. No, Sagan's famous words are pure materialistic, naturalistic philosophy. Okay? Note that Sagan's starting point is not a conclusion of science. Rather, it's a philosophical presupposition imposed on the scientific project. And what's that presupposition? The physical universe is all there is. And therefore, science is the best way we know about stuff in the world. And this is the assumption that has been artificially placed on science at odds with religion. For example, let's just consider this statement by an atheist. There's no resurrection because I know from science that dead people stay dead. Well, science teaches no such thing. Science can tell us if a body is dead or if it's alive. It cannot tell us if a dead body can come back to life or not. It is not science that tells the atheist that resurrections can't happen. It's his philosophy that dictates that. And to verify my point, let me read a striking statement made by a world-class geneticist at Harvard. His name is Richard Lewontin, who without shame and without embarrassment admits the science game has been rigged. And here's what he says. It's a famous quote. Our willingness to accept scientific claims that are against common sense, his words, is the key to an understanding of the real struggle between science and the supernatural. We take the side of science in spite of the patent absurdity of some of its constructs because we have a prior commitment, a commitment to materialism. And we are forced by our adherence to material causes to create an apparatus of investigation and a set of concepts that produce material explanations. No matter how counterintuitive, no matter how mystifying to the uninitiated, moreover, that materialism is absolute, for we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. Richard Lewontin is not the only one to make this admission. Many others have done it as well. He was just the boldest, I think. And here's the consequence. When intelligent design is disqualified for being unscientific, it's rejected not on its evidential merits, that is, a violation of the scientific method. They haven't done bad science. It's disqualified on its philosophic implications. It's a violation of materialist philosophy. We cannot allow a divine foot in the door. Now, here's a way these points might play out in conversation. Someone says, intelligent design is not science. It's religion disguised as science. Really? I say. How so? Again, that's Columbo number one. We're looking for clarification. Well, science is all about physical events, empirically verified. Intelligent design, that brings God into the picture. That's not science. So you're objecting because theists suggest that some agent, not some physical cause, is responsible for certain features of the natural world. That's another clarification question, right? Exactly, he says. So is archaeology science? Oh, yeah, of course. Well, doesn't archaeology study the role of agents in history? Sure. Well, what about forensic pathology? Well, of course, but those are different. Why? Because they're human agents, not supernatural agents. But what if the evidence is really good that a supernatural agent is the best explanation of certain physical facts? Well, it's still religion, not science. Well, now I have another question about that. Okay. It sounds like you're rejecting intelligent design because, strictly speaking, according to your definition, it's religious. Right. Well, you know, usually when an option is rejected, it's not because it's a certain kind of answer, like religious, but because it's based on bad facts or maybe unsound thinking. So I'm curious, what are the specific reasons, other than you don't like the category religious, that you don't think intelligent design is a good explanation for, say, the origin of life or the information in the DNA blueprint? Okay, here's another objection. And the objection here is appealing to supernatural explanations is just a God of the gaps fallacy. So here's the critic's claim. Just because science hasn't solved some of the problems, that doesn't mean it never will. There's no need to punt to superstition. A rational, that is, naturalistic answer will eventually be available. Using God to arbitrarily plug the holes that science hasn't yet filled is misguided. Okay, now here's my response. First, this complaint is circular reasoning. Why? It assumes as part of the argument what needs to be proved but the argument. This complaint presumes that there will always be a naturalistic explanation. Why? Because naturalism is true. So science is bound to solve the problem eventually. Of course, the whole thing at issue here is whether naturalism is true or not. All this objection does is replace the so-called God of the gaps with a naturalism of the gaps. Here's the real issue. All prejudices aside, which explanation best fits the evidence? That's all that should matter. Second, careful appeals to supernatural agency, God, are not based on ignorance. They're not based on what we don't know. They're based on the evidence of what we do know. They are not leaps of faith, all right? Design can be detected empirically. And if the evidence is good for design, then there's no gap. It's been filled with a real answer based on good reasons. Just because the solution is not the right kind of answer, for some people, a naturalistic one, doesn't mean it's not the right answer. Third, sometimes the very nature of an event makes a naturalistic explanation completely implausible. I mean, it may be theoretically possible that a man with 5 bullet holes in his chest died from natural causes, but it doesn't mean it's reasonable to hold out for a natural explanation. What really matters is the evidence at hand, not future materialistic fantasies, all right? So here's a sample dialogue. The objector says, when you appeal to a supernatural cause, that's just the God of the gaps fallacy all over again. My response, what exactly is the problem here? Well, you see a gap in the scientific explanation, so you just say God did it. Is that really what you think I'm doing here? Sure. But what about the good evidence for a supernatural designer, like the origin of the universe, or the origin of life, or the incredible fine-tuning we see in the cosmos, or in the biological world? Well, science will eventually find answers to those problems. Science will fill the gap. Well, help me understand why that isn't an example of naturalism of the gaps. You just said science would fill the gap. Well, science has shown in the past that it can answer the issues without any need for God. So you're confident that your naturalism of the gaps is okay, even though you don't have the evidence in this case, but God is not an okay answer, even though there's good evidence for a supernatural agent. Is that right? Okay, notice with this line of thinking, I'm just holding their feet to the fire on the issue, all right? Now, you may not know this, but religion and science have not always been in conflict. This is a recent development historically. The warfare model is a result of two books in the late 19th century. One was The History of the Conflict Between Religion and Science by John Draper in 1874, and another one was A History of the Warfare of Science with Theology and Christendom by Andrew White in 1896. Now, both works kind of fanned the flames between evolutionists of the time and religious fundamentalists of the time, pitting, as the authors characterized it, science and progress against superstition and repression. Historians of science, though, they have a different account of the role religion played in the birth of modern science. Naturalism was not the driving force in the early days. Rather, believe it or not, theological conviction was a foundational factor in the genesis of science, okay? The basic methods of science had sprouted, ironically, from the theological soil of Christian Europe, and there's a good reason why. The obvious order of the universe, the order of nature, this fit the Christian convictions of the pioneers of modern science. It was clear to them a divine mind had ordered the world the way it was. And they reasoned, if a rational God fashioned the universe, then rational man, made in God's image, could unlock its secrets. That was the thinking of men like astronomer Johannes Kepler, or chemist Robert Boyle, or physicist Isaac Newton. In fact, you may have not known this, but Newton wrote more on theology than he did on science. 1.3 million words. These men all viewed nature as God's second book of Revelation. They also understand that given the fall, human reason was fallible. So, systematic testing, experimentation, close observation were all necessary to avoid error. Thus, the scientific method began to take shape by Christians. So here's a partial list of deeply committed theists, all founders of science, whose religious convictions complemented rather than conflicted with their scientific efforts. I already mentioned Kepler, who discovered the laws of planetary motion. I already mentioned Boyle, developer of the modern scientific method and founder of modern chemistry. I already mentioned Newton, English mathematician, physicist, astronomer, theologian, who developed the principle of universal gravity. But there's also Copernicus, mathematician and astronomer. He established the foundation of heliocentric theory. Galileo, physicist and astronomer, who confirmed heliocentrism and pioneered the modern scientific method. Blaise Pascal, mathematical prodigy who founded modern probability theory and hydraulics, also contributed to the advance of differential calculus. Carolus Linnaeus, botanist, founder of the modern scientific classification of plants and animals called taxonomy. You had George Cuvier, naturalist and founder of comparative anatomy, the father of paleontology. Michael Faraday, physicist and chemist who discovered electromagnetic induction. Gregor Mendel, an Augustinian monk, for goodness sake, father of modern genetics. One thing is clear from history. There has never been any inherent hostility between the Christian worldview and the methods or the principles of science proper. Christianity is not at war with science. It never has been. Rather, Western civilization, grounded in the biblical worldview, was the birthplace of the scientific enterprise. God was not a science stopper. He was the science starter. Now, this doesn't prove their Christian views, of course, were correct. That's another project. What it does show is that there's no inherent conflict between the worldview of Christianity and the methods of science. The conflict comes when the philosophy of materialism is artificially imposed on the scientific enterprise, demanding not always the right answers, but the right kind of answers. So here's a sample dialogue that trades on these ideas. The objection, of course, starting first. Religion has always been at war with science. Well, what exactly is the conflict? Oh, you know, religious people think faith is more important than reason. Do you happen to know where modern science began? No, I don't. It began in Western Europe. Do you know why? I have no idea. Because those people believed in God. That God made an orderly world that could be discovered through careful observation. Well, I never heard that. Do you know who the founders of science were and what their beliefs were? Well, I know about people like Copernicus and Galileo. The church persecuted them because of their scientific beliefs. Now, that was rough for them. Well, I understand that. But do you know what their own theological beliefs were? No. Well, those two were Christians, along with just about every other founding father of modern science. Really? Really. In fact, Isaac Newton, he wrote more on theology than he did on science. He believed that what he discovered in science would help him understand God better. There was no conflict in Newton's mind between science and religion. So where did all this conflict come from then? Well, it came from a different religion. Really? Which one? The religion of naturalism. Well, that's better than sticking God into the gaps. Well, here's what I suggest. Why not just follow the evidence wherever it leads? Usually we'll discover that the causes of natural events will be natural. No problem. But sometimes the evidence is going to point to an agent, just like it does in forensic pathology, for example. Sometimes it might even point to a supernatural agent. What's wrong with that? Well, because that approach will kill science. Well, that's hard to believe since, ironically and historically, religion was the science starter. Let me suggest this, though. How about if we just use the methods of science to find out the truth about our world, whatever it is? No inquisitions on either side. What do you think? So, friends, you can be confident that no discoveries of science have in any way compromised theism or belief in the supernatural. In fact, what science has discovered about the universe in the last 100 years has made the existence of a divine designer more probable, not less probable. Here's the real issue. Will the scientific community use its fine methodology to follow the truth wherever it leads? Or will it try to replay Galileo's Inquisition in reverse and use law and politics and intimidation to silence any opposition to its own modern creation story? That's the issue. So let's review what we covered this time. First, I explain why it's not possible for science to disprove God or miracles or souls or anything of that sort. That's because the task is completely beyond its capability. It's like trying to weigh a chicken with a yardstick. Science cannot inveigh against anything it's not capable of measuring with empirical methods. Second, we learned that the alleged battle between science and religion has been a philosophical power play designed to keep any God alternative off the table. Science is not currently defined simply by a fine methodology to give us the right answers about the universe. It's also restrained by philosophy, a philosophy called naturalism or materialism, and it forces scientists to give the right kind of answers. Okay. Third, appealing to God as an explanation for unique events like the origin of the universe, for example, or the origin of life. This is not an example of the God of the gaps. First, that claim is circular, since it presumes that naturalism is true and that naturalistic explanations will eventually fill the gaps. But that's what's in question, isn't it? Naturalism. Second, appeals to a designer are not based on ignorance. They're based on evidence. Consequently, in many cases, there actually is no gap, since an adequate, well-justified design explanation fills the so-called gap. And finally, history shows that belief in God was the science starter, not the science stopper, and for good reason. Both the methods of science and much of the foundational content of science arose in Christian Western Europe. The fathers of science saw uniformity of order in nature and concluded a divine mind had ordered the world. And if a rational God could fashion the universe, then a rational man could unlock its secrets through systematic testing, experimentation, and close careful observation. Thus, theists were the founding fathers of astronomy and physics and mathematics and taxonomy and chemistry and paleontology and electromagnetism and genetics. So here's your assignment for next session. Find a friend and share with him some of the things you've covered here in this session. Explain to him precisely why it's not possible for science to disprove God or rule out the possibility, at least, of miracles. Help him understand the difference between the methods of science designed to give right answers and the philosophy of materialism designed to give the right kind of answers. Then sketch out, as best you can, the reasons why modern science grew out of Christian theological convictions in Western Europe. Then give a few examples of the Christian founding fathers of various scientific disciplines. Now, in our next session together, we will tackle the most pressing moral and human rights issue of our day, abortion. I'm Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason. See you next time.